Hey, welcome to the 5 a.m. Master Scrum Thursday night interview program, where we interview people that are the movers and shakers and different aspects of Agile Scrum. I call them change agents. Doesn't necessarily have to be an Agile Scrum, but people that are changing and bringing ideas and thoughts that we can use in our business. So I have William Stridham. He's an integral Agilist. Agilist, is that what you call it? Professional coach. Leadership developer, and an Agilist who is currently spreading the joy of modern ways of working and agility across teams, departments, and organizations. I love what you wrote there, by the way. Believes in evoking excellence in others. William and I met through Marcia Acker in her cohort activities while I was earning my IC Agile Expert Agile Coaching Program. Never finished it, but I had fun and enjoyed it. Just the 2020 event made it hard for me to finish everything. But this interview, what we're going to have, is not your classic interview of what do you want to know about Agile or business, but let's get to know William a little bit and what he would like to share to people and teams around the world about the latest shifts in Agile space. And him and I are going to have a little conversation. We're going to meet William a little bit and tell us a little about his story. And then we're going to dive into a couple sections that we want to do. And just so everyone knows, we're going to have a group conversation later on where we are going to invite the 5 a.m. Master Scrum meetup group to tag along in the conversation, to broaden the conversation. We're going to have a little conversation here to get it started, share with what we're thinking, what we're thoughts. And that way, when we do the meetup in a couple weeks on the, I think it's the 15th. What day is it? I think it's the 15th of May. 15th of May, which is in like 2 weeks from now. And we're going to bring that up and have a conversation, maybe go and what other people in our co-working environment are seeing and stuff like that. So, cool. So with that, before we dive into the discussion about the shifts in Agile space, William, can you share some of your background journey, tell us about a little about it, and something that's not in your LinkedIn profile that we wouldn't get.
Oh, yeah. There might be a lot there. First of all, Greg, thank you for having me on your program. I appreciate that. For me, once you can probably all pick up that I've got this accent. So I'm originally from South Africa. Currently living in the Mid-Atlantic region in Central Virginia. As most people that find them in the Agile space or doing work there, we all had a previous career. And my previous career was I was a mainframe developer. That's actually how I did the move from South Africa over to the US, because I came over to fix the Y2K bug. You know, that was the biggest project that everybody worked on way back in the day. And I'm probably dating myself by saying that. And then I kind of moved through, as most people, as you go through your career journey. I went into project management at one point, and then I got into a startup where I ran their research and development and infrastructure, things like that. And then I found Agile coaching, and I went into that. And now I'm just doing a whole bunch of different things. I'm not sure which one I do. Like we're struggling to say in the intro, yeah, I'm an integral Agilist. In other words, I look at four different quadrants when we're looking for organizational change or working with teams. I do some leadership development. I do some Agile coaching. We've got some developmental programs we run. Oops, and I'm losing my earbud. And yeah, so we've got all those things going at the same time. And that's me in a nutshell. So the bottom line is I'm not sure who I am these days, but whatever you need me to be, I can probably help you in one way or another.
So what's not in your LinkedIn profile besides where you came from? Give me something.
Probably as I was going through that software development phase, I went from like mainframe development to the internet just started to come up as well. And I was kind of there in that. So HTML and JavaScript and kind of learning Java, just so, because with what we did, I was working at the Virginia DMV at one point. And we did some things where we built a web front end to a mainframe back end. So where the full stack developers these days, not a lot of people are hooking up a web front end to a mainframe in the back end. So I was part of a group doing that with help from Microsoft and other folks. So yeah, it was some cutting edge stuff back in the day. So yeah, and then even the last, I worked with teams doing mobile development as well. So especially when I was at the dot com in the educational space, we did some work around that where we just transitioned from like delivering service on a website to mobile development as well.
Okay, cool. I'll ask you about your hats later that are on the shelves behind you. But okay, so let's chat about the shift in the need of potentially in the agile specific roles. Like we want to talk about that a little bit, and then we're going to get into another book, which we'll get into next. But some large businesses, and this is where you and I are going to chat a little bit, have cut out like large units of agile specialists or something dedicated to agile practices. So you wanted to bring that up. I'll let you go first, and then I'll kind of follow up with my thoughts and stuff like that. So what are you seeing? What are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think when was this? This was like started to get the sense of it last year already, like the end of 2022, going into 2023. I started to notice a lot of people, especially on LinkedIn, would say, "Hey, we've just had rounds of like layoffs here. I'm open to work, all of that." And we were starting to look at, what's happening, what's going on, because we feel the impact because we do talk with those people and reach out to them. And then Capital One was one of a credit card company here on the East Coast. They did a, oh, we're letting go of our agile family, as they called it. So anybody, the agile coaches, product owners, scrum masters, anybody with those titles, they literally let them go. I think they also did ask them to, hey, you've got to apply for other jobs because these jobs are all going away. And so we've not started to notice the shift that's happening in where a lot of organizations are now going, we don't want these specializations just in agile only. We want you to be able to perform a function and just have agile skills. So that's kind of something that I started to pick up. And I don't know what have you been noticing as well?
Well, actually, when that happened, I offered to a lot of those people that got let loose, or at least I had connections to on LinkedIn, free access to my Slack channel, anything I could do. I'm not gonna charge you for it. Just join and join my newsletter so we can chat if they have problems or have things and they can talk about it. I'll be honest with you, a lot of people didn't say nothing. I was like, well, I wonder why you got, like, come on, you gotta talk. You're supposed to be agile people and communicate and share and all. And then I didn't see much on that. But I mean, I see it as a move where I think it's because of the way they've been using Agile. I think it's the way they've been using those resources. They are just trying to use them to, organize documentation. They turn and become big documenters, to be honest. Became a PMO shop, right? They're a version of the PMO shop, is what I saw. And, I see a lot of that. I think I keep seeing it come out today that they're hiring less of them or not having a soul thing. I just saw it as some groups that built their kingdom, their own little stovepipe, which we're supposed to be totally against stovepipes, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. We got our way from waterfall and, and here goes the agile people. Let's build our own stovepipes. I think I saw that a lot. How about you?
Yeah, it's I definitely noticed where some people were just going through, like the Scrum guide says you've got to do these things. They create the reports, they do all that, and it was very almost like a machine, very mechanistic almost. There wasn't this like, hey, there's also the people side to it, or are we really living it out? That's kind of why I put in my, I'm bringing the joy of ways of working. And I don't talk about Agile now, not because Agile is wrong or there's, I mean, there's still value in it. Mm-hmm. But the value that they're looking at it now, from my perspective, is different than before. It's not like you can go in and go, okay, I'm going to come and make you all agile. I mean, nobody can do that, to be honest. What we can do is tell people, here's a different way of doing things. What are you willing to do? What are your pain points as well? Because sometimes, you know, a lot of people come in telling them, oh, what you're doing is all wrong. This is not right, you know, all that. I mean, those people were successful, but that's why they got to where they were.
Yeah.
But I've got this adage where I tell people, you know, what got you here may not get you where you want to go next.
Mm-hmm.
Either you want to grow or the world around you is changing. The marketplace is changing. The org is changing. So you have to kind of keep with that. And what are you doing to keep up with it?
Well, But I would take it another way. When I see large organizations come down, it's like the Tower of Babel, right? I have a philosophy of making things smaller and spread them out with the work that's coming down. I've been very successful in my career making millions of dollars for companies because I didn't make a big show. And I think they wanted to get the limelight. And I think someone said, ooh, there's a big chunk of something. We can make one swoop and get rid of it. And I think they got caught with their own ego. If you want to know the truth, I think it was an ego issue. And I think you have to be careful in that.
People and egos. And part of for me around that is, I mean, we do get people that, especially in a corporate environment where it's very hierarchical, you know, that's a way to provide for your family is you want to keep climbing the ladder. And some people climb the ladder by win-win, and some people do the ladder by win-lose. If I win and you lose, even if I have to step on you to get to the next rung, I'm going to do it. So, you know, for me, I was always like, let's try and do the win-win.
We
both get up the rung. So,
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking more of, I'm going to build my own little independent empire that I've been through this with project management for years and program management and matrix organization. You know, it's this and then it's this and then it goes back to this and this. And I think they just caught up in that matrix world where they decided they didn't need the agile only competency in their organization, you know? And I think you just have to be careful with designing that in your organization. Like if you're gonna work there and we don't commingle, let's say, and share responsibility for performance, we're doing a risky, now you're all overhead. You know what I mean? And what's the first thing in a corporate industry that gets cut? Can we all say overhead? So if you act like overhead and you perform like overhead and you're not part of the delivery and integral into that process, you're overhead. And I think some people just... And it's a shame because it took a lot of people down with them. But they created that overhead empire, right? Come on. I have a dog trying to get up here too. I have both a dog and a cat.
And a cat. Hey, they all welcome on.
Do you want to say hi, Jerry? There's Jerry.
Look at that, Jerry.
Jerry's here.
Bubbles is there somewhere.
And Bubbles is right here. There goes Jerry. Jerry, come on. You got to get over here, man.
Yeah.
Now I got that tail in front of me.
Yeah.
This is the live aspect of the 5 a.m. Master Scrum Show. It's like an animal farm here. All adopted.
Hey, it's good.
All adopted rescue dogs and cats and stuff like that. So we do help that purpose. You're definitely not. I'm telling the dog, he's definitely not purebred. Anyway.
So talking about overhead and people acting as overhead. And I've probably been fortunate where when I was at the .com, I mean, it was so small, you have to flex into other areas as well. And so as I grew up and got into my leadership roles, I got to probably experience that different than some other folks probably have, which were in more structural hierarchical organizations. So nothing wrong with that. There's places all over for that. But then as I moved into my agile coaching space and started to do that work, I was fortunate because for me, when I got into it, it was definitely, it was a job title and a role.
Yeah.
But I always viewed it as there are skills that you have to have to do these. You know, you've got to be able to facilitate. You've got to be able to do training. You've got to be able to do coaching. It wasn't just to me, oh, it's a role that you fill. It's these are skills that you have. And I think part of what's starting to come to light now is people are now viewing these as they're not roles, they're skills. They're starting to differentiate those.
But I want to throw this out there. My theory is that I've seen Scrum Master, Product Owner roles, and Agile, pure Agile doing it that way, work really well when there's a big project that has a deadline that needs to get delivered to roll out a new functionality. Something new, something that, because every time I've seen that happen properly with this real Scrum Master, they usually deliver on time and quicker than any other time they ever tried in the past. Like, they tried doing it so many times before. Spent years on it. Like, laying out, I've been to a couple of years, like 5 years to lay out software. We did it in 6 months. You know what I mean? Versus, I want to implement Scrum or Agile on top of what I normally do. Day-to-day feature factories. You know what I mean? There's no, in a feature factory, there's not necessarily there's not a priority. It's not a motivation. It's not like that enthusiasm to build something new. You're just, here's a new feature, do that. Here's a new feature. And it becomes a machine. And once it becomes a machine, you become a commodity in the organization, right? But like every time I see, if you're a company that wants to build something new and different, I recommend hiring a Scrum Master. Because it's going to get people to come up ways and find things and shortcuts and stuff that wasn't readily visible based on architecture or design or whatever. That having that Scrum Master product owner taking that out of the role of the team, let them focus on what they're doing and just keep them unblocked, per se, and keep them talking, I think produces a better product, quality product. What do you think about that?
So, I would say yes and no.
Okay.
So, if there's a maturity level of this, and so I'm talking about how well is a team formed and organized, and what skills are already on the team.
Yeah.
Like if you have the team where they don't have that organizational skills or the facilitation, the things aren't there. Yeah, that's where your Scrum Master will be adding to that. But if you have a team or an organization possibly, or an area in an organization, and they might be more mature in it where they've been together for a good couple of years. I have run into not often, but I have run into teams where they have been together for a while. They are matured in their ways of working. So they don't need somebody to corral them. They corral themselves. So instead of a person filling it, the team kind of fills the role. But it's few and far between. So that's not the common thing. But I think that's kind of what organizations are striving for now. And the reason I'm saying that is it's that report that we want to bring in from the Business Agility and Scrum Alliance.
Okay.
That yeah, they did a report which came out late 2023. It's called Skills in the New World of Work.
Yep.
And they put that out in the world. We'll probably put a link in so people can access that.
Oh yeah, definitely. We'll put it in the notes.
Yeah. And to me, there's a couple of good things in the report. And of course, it also was starting to validate that sense that we started to get where, hey, things are shifting in the workplace. Where, and one of them is people are going, they had this adage of T-shaped, and now they're talking about pie shape was one thing. So they want people to not just have one specialization, but two. And part of it for me that's coming up there is the there's two viewpoints on that. I've heard some people say, yep, let's say you were a software developer.
Okay.
Now you've learned agile skills as well. Now you can do both. So you might be pie-shaped. And then I also hear other people go, well, now corporations or organizations are trying to get one person to do two people's worth of work.
Yep.
Which is another way of looking at it.
Right.
So to me, if you do get one person and you want them to fill both those roles or skills or however you want to look at it, you can't expect that person to all of a sudden work 80 hours a week. They're still just going to work their 40 hours a week, but they will be doing, let's say, development, or let's say they do project management with it, or whatever it is, stakeholder management, whatever that is, that other skill that goes with these. So there's got to be that level set. It's not going to be you put, oh, this person has got both these skills, skill sets, and now we're just going to give them double the work. That won't work either.
So on that note, and that's an interesting point. So many Scrum Masters I coached, and product owners and business and whatever they were, even developers, really. It's funny, they're supposed to be agile agents, but they wanted to stay in their lane. They didn't want to learn anything else. Like, you always got this question, do I need to know technically what the team is doing, or do I need to know the product line and be a Scrum Master? I'm like, well, yeah, when you first start out, you're not, just like any employee, you're not going to know that much. But 6 months to a year into the job, you should kind of know what they're doing. If not picked up on some hacks you can do or something you can do to contribute more than just be the Scrum Master, right? Understanding the code, understanding the product line, whatever you are in that thing. And I interviewed a lot of people that wanted to be agile coaches when I worked at one very large financial institution. And I would see people that just got, and I want to talk about certs later. We're going to hit certs. Would get a cert in Scrum Master or whatever 5-6 years prior, right? But then I see nothing anywhere. No training, no extending of your knowledge. Did you learn anything else? Did you do some software? How'd you learn? You know, I saw nothing. So a lot of them just rested on the laurels. I got my cert. I don't need to learn anything. And I think it just puts you at a detriment. And that goes into that pie shape. Don't rest on your laurels. Don't rest on, I know how to do SQL. I know how to do HTML. I know how to do Java. I know how to do AWS. If you just rest on that one track, no matter where you are in the business, you're going to fall behind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah. And it's also, in some organizations, it is going to be like that functional skills. And that can be different. I mean, these days, artificial intelligence is a big thing. So if you a prompt engineer, and you can do some Scrum Masters or a product owner role that goes with that, or IT security, I mean, things like that. If you especially work in a government space, that's something. If you've got that, man, you can go a long way with that. So you've got to combine these things. Development, you know, being a full stack engineer, that's a full-time job. I recognize that. And what I'm saying is this other, two skill sets running at the same time, it's going to be a lot of work to keep up with what's developing in it, because it keeps evolving. It doesn't stand still, especially if you're going to be in the artificial intelligence space. That's just starting to take off now. So all those things, you've got to do a lot of learning to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the segue into certs, because I mean, to me, there's two sides to it.
Yeah.
I got a whole bunch of certs, and part of why I got it was at the beginning when as soon as I make a pivot in my career, like if I go from when I was a software developer into project management, I want to differentiate myself because I don't have the experience yet.
Right.
So then, what are the relevant certs? So I get like my PMP certification, because that opens a door for you. But once you go through the door, then you've got to do the work and get the
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah.
The same happened to me as I went into the agile space. Got a whole bunch of certs there, but I also went to go do the work so I can augment. So at some point, the certs becomes less meaningful
Yeah.
because now I can bring in, oh, here's what I've done, here's what I've delivered. Combine it with some other things on the ground. Like all of a sudden, I don't have any certs in design thinking, but I've worked with people that are really were steeped in it. So I'll learn from them, and then all of a sudden, my T shape or pie shape goes really
Yeah.
sideways. But I'm not a design thinking expert,
Right.
but I do know some of the tools and I can use them,
Yeah. Yeah. Now I and before we dive into that a little bit, I do want to step back a little bit. I watched Agile coaches and Scrum Master when I first started this. They all had their sticky notes on the wall, which was great when you're all co-located. But even before we went to this total virtual we were, they already started going virtual. They were already getting we had teams in India and Australia and Europe and South Africa. And they're like, oh, well, I don't like Jira. Or I don't like whatever tool was a virtual tool. I'm like, but you're building teams that are virtually included in each other. They can't see your sticky note wall board. You know? And that's the same idea where you got this pie shape. Oh, I'm just going to do it my way, the way I've done it. It's like, no, you got to kind of keep an eye on the ball. And this is where this article really plays good. This study tries to show where the ball's going. And if you're not ahead of it, like you said with the ChatGPT, I mean, we did a show. Bubbles has her own storyline going on about her stories and adventures in the Bubbles, the Calico Cat. And just me, I just was playing with it. We had a product on another Scrum Master myself. We talked about ChatGPT. We experiment with it just to try it off the ground. I'll tell you right now, if there's a Scrum Master or product owner BA that hasn't done it yet, you ain't gonna be around very long. You know? Even if it just does basic stuff. All the marketing people are using, like if you're marketing, I mean, I'm hearing it now. Even if you don't use it, because I tell you, I can read, and that's the other thing by using it. I can read when someone's using ChatGPT and when they're not. And I go, well, that's ChatGPT. I can tell by the words and the language and the use of the phrases you're using and the fluffy words, right? It's like, oh my God, it's so classic. And they look at me like, what? No, I know. I know it's the computer. And you have to experiment with that. You have to go into that. And then going into what this article, like you got into the certs, right? And it's kind of we started going to that. What about certs? What do they need? So what did you take on it? Because there's a slide in there that I saw that was really telling to me that I use all the time and I laugh at people now. I would never laugh at people, but yeah, I do. So tell me what you saw with the whole cert thing.
In the report, sorry, I'm looking to the left-hand side of the report
Yeah,
here,
me
sort of
too. I am too.
focusing my eyes go up into the sky.
It's
So
okay.
bear with me. Yeah, I'm trying to. Do you know the page number of the cert one? Because of course I can't find the
Of
page
course, it's
now.
buried in the back. It's bare. It's like buried at the end. I'm
I
actually
see
trying.
important of education, which is on page 15. The role of certifications on page 16.
16? Yeah, I'm going there now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Yep. Page 16.
Yeah. So, yeah, the role of the certs for me, as I was saying, it was differentiating yourself. Some people, especially in the when I was in the project management world, there was a lot of emphasis put on having a PMP certification.
Yep.
You got a salary bump or an hourly rate bump if you were a consultant, a project management consultant. So there is the aspect of increased salary or compensation.
Yeah.
For me, I looked at it more like opening doors for me, things like that. That's kind of how I viewed it. I mean, the other thing where I got really probably lucky to a certain degree was I delivered a lot of IC Agile courses through my career. And every time you get authorized to train the course, of course, you get the cert you're teaching others.
That's part of going up in your game, right? I mean, you're learning it. Learning it, practicing, and teaching it are the best way to understanding it and getting that feedback loop. You know what I mean? So you were doing that realm of becoming an expert at it, right?
Yeah. It was just kind of, and I mean, it's like product ownership. You know, when you are working with teams and you are building products, I mean, when I was at the .com, it was just in our DNA. That's how we survived. We had to go. I mean, I joined. We had one product line. I left, and we were up to three product lines.
Yeah.
So we had to be creative. We had to do stuff. And it's trial and error. I mean, we did in those days. Lean Startup was the in book, and so we all read it, and we were trying those things out, and what worked and what doesn't work.
What I found was interesting, and I too got on certs more because if you're a PMP, you know they want you to get those PDUs. So my logic was, and it's still that same logic, was my Scrum Alliance certs and all that. You know, Scrum.org doesn't necessarily require you to do. I don't know if the advanced ones now they require to do some kind of educational thing, but you had to take some classes during a year to get your credits so you can keep your cert right. So for me, I got on my certs a lot of times because I was just taking classes to learn new things, to validate new stuff, to more T, more pie shape, right? To support my existing cert. Always made sure I had something. If I took a class, it applied to all my certifications. You know, it took care of all. One class took all of them, got them all proper. So that's why I got a lot of my certs. But I don't mind having a cert, having a third party validate kind of what you know versus an internal thing. Like, I always suspicious. I went to one big company and they were doing PMP. They had their own version of project management. And they would tell me, oh, ours is so different. I look at them and go, oh, how long have you been in this company? Because what you're doing here is very similar to what all these other companies have been. I've been through a couple different companies and it's pretty close. No, it's different. It's unique. Okay, it's unique, then can't apply to anybody else, and no one knows if what you learn there applies. By having that third-party certification, it neutralizes that thought problem. Oh, ours was unique. Well, then why would I hire you? I mean, right out the bat, you know, if you're going to tell me your stuff is only applied to your company, then I don't want to hire you because I want something you can apply to my company. You know what I mean? So they paint themselves into a corner. Just like the whole Capital One or those people, I think they paint. But anyway, what I always thought was funny, I had Agile coaches when I first got into this, and I was a Scrum Master, and I got my certs, and I figured what certs I wanted because I knew things from years of being a project manager and things I really wanted to increase my skill, like you said. And they didn't have a lot of certs. I had my certs. And I was still getting certs, still earning my path. And they said, well, I don't need certs because I know what I'm doing. 5 or 6 years later, when I look at their LinkedIn profile, they're all SAFe certified in every aspect of SAFe and, you know, and this and that. I go, oh, so who needs a cert now? You were all big talkers like you didn't want a cert. And what I love about this survey is the one graphic, and it really goes, and you talked about AI, and now all these companies are using AI to scrub resumes, go through resumes, find good resumes, look for them. It's just a computer. Computers program to look for things. Either there's a yes or a no. If they program in there, I want a CSM, or I want a CSPO, or I want a PSM, or a PMP, and you don't have it, you ain't getting it, right? And this one graph on here, and this is so much funny. Like, they would say, they asked, the people who have the certificate, or the contributors, individual people, you know, what do you think the importance of the survey, or a cert is? And they all ranked it like the bottom percentage, a lot of them all ranked low, and so on and so forth. But the people that were hiring, you know, most of them were way above three, if not higher, in the rankings. Like, they thought it was important that you had the cert. So you could be on your high horse out there. I'm just telling all the people out there in the world, they're like, I'm going to be on high horse. I don't need a stinking cert. You can be on your high horse. But you ain't getting through the gatekeepers. You ain't getting through the AI, you know, unless you have a million publications out there and data that the AI can go scrub the internet and pull. Oh, yeah, this person's really well written out there, published and all that stuff. And you don't have any of those certs. They're looking for the cert. So if you really want a job and it's a weed out thing, right, if they don't want to spend the time really getting to know you as an applicant, they're going to weed out all the people without certs. I'm just talking cold, hard truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of people use it that way. If there's a big organization where the hiring process is actually siloed, because it is, like you're saying, they've got a filter up front through some kind of system, which they do checks and balances on checking for things. Then they've got this person in HR who doesn't know the work they are specialized in, human resources or people operations, whatever they call that, which is cool.
Yeah.
Those people are needed, and they will then look through it. And then there's probably the hiring manager who's in that department or function who's actually doing the work. And I wonder how well all three of those people line up with somebody's resume coming through to that person on a team going, oh, this is a good team member that was just hired. I always wonder about that.
But you know, and you brought, we skipped it, and you brought up a good point, because I want to go back to an earlier slide just real quick, and then, you know, we'll talk about what you're doing next. Percent of participating organizations looking for each skill, and I think it's on page 6. And they have a chart like human skills versus functional skills. And these are the ones that aren't really on the resume. I think they, when they read it, they said, yeah, these aren't the things they're really at, but they want. And this is the skills they want, but it ain't on the resume. That was a neat thing, too. They would write these job applications. Wouldn't talk about any of these human skills or any of this stuff. And I see, like, communication. They said, like, 30%, 32% was a number or some number like that, more looking for those human skills in the applicant than necessarily just the technical one. You know, communications, teamwork and collaboration, attitude behaviors, problem solving, critical thinking, emotional intelligence, empathy, leadership, influence, coaching. So most of that's all up in that fluffy skills. So it tells me, even though, like you said, with the pie shape, they want that Scrum Master skill set. They want what those Scrum Master are. If you're a Scrum Master, say, I'm not a facilitator, I'm not a teacher, or I don't communicate, those are skills that you got to pile on. And even skills for if you're a technical person, you should get. Because, and this is my argument I had, when I love Scrum, done right, it's a beautiful thing. Scrum, sprint planning, that's all about teamwork and collaboration, right? What are we going to do? Communications is all about sprint review. I heard saw somebody put some sprint review is terrible. I'm like, well, that's how you communicate to your stakeholders. What do you mean? Yes. You know? And if you don't have the skills, and I'm trying to teach people when I coach them, I'm giving them opportunities like this to present at my meetup, present, write some papers, because you got to communicate. You got to learn how to market your team. You know, that's one thing that I in the future, I'm just going off a tangent real quick. I go on tangents. And William knows that. And it's like, I think Scrum Master should be the marketing agent for the teams, as well as the product owner. I think one of the jobs we don't do enough of is to help make our teams look good so people give us more work. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's whoever's leading your product or service there, they should be advocating for that and what falls in the purview of why that team exists.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you. The Scrum Master for me or whoever is filling those skills or roles is around how well the team is working. So I always kind of, there is for me a little, some people go, oh, it's between these two. No, it's like product owner is around the product or service.
Yeah.
And Scrum Master is around how well the team works together.
But now, do you hire a product service or do you hire a team?
Well, you have to have both. Because if you just have a product owner, he or she will have all the best ideas and probably a great backlog and all of that. But it's not going to happen because you need a team to actually create it and make it into whatever is needed.
Build
it as such.
Yeah, and I said it that way because I think even if we were to outsource, we don't necessarily – we buy a product – but we outsource a team, right? We hire a team of people to help do what we want to do. If we just want to buy a product, we buy it off the shelf and, you know, it's plug and play, or you might have to have a team to
software as a integrate. Service, so,
yeah, you might have to integrate it. Then again, if I'm doing integration work, would you want a product team or a team that works well together when you have to integrate something? Oh yeah, I saw this problem over here, or this failed. How do I fix that? I want that team, and the Scrum Master's job is our team really clicks. We see problems, we get them fixed. You know, we don't let them dilly-dally around, or we come up with those complex solutions and come up with answers, no matter what it is. You know, I kind of think most teams, most developers are so darn smart. They really want to. They can build anything they want. They can easily jump and learn new skills, new practices, and come up with something. It's about that ability to work as a teamwork and collaborate that makes them so much better. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and it's like you were talking at the beginning around that communication, collaboration, all leadership, all those. When people talk, oh, those are soft skills, and Evan Laybourne actually talks about they are the super skills, because those are the things that's really needed, especially, I mean, if we work with knowledge workers, which that's what most teams are made up of, people that are, the knowledge is sitting in their head. It's not like we're doing assembly lines and, you know, except for Tesla and those folks, and even half of what's in the vehicle is software, not really hardware. So you've got to look at that. All that stuff is, these soft skills are what's needed to make things happen. That's the kind of lubricant that makes the team go from just working together to high performing.
I would also say those soft skills are needed. I used to call it, when my engineers would disappear for a while, when I was doing program management, I wouldn't hear from an engineer. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Why are you stuck? Why'd you disappear? I don't hear anything from you. You disappeared for like a week. What's going on? And I'd go hunt them down and go see, oh, I'm stuck on this problem. I'd get a couple people to work together with the person to solve the problem like in a day, you know, because they're so wrapped up into it. They just needed that teamwork or that thought to penetrate their mind, even if it was wrong, to trigger something. Oh, wow. Yeah, if I looked at it this way, I could do this, and then, oh, that fixes my problem, and boom, they're like the solution line. That's what that collaboration is. Okay. Yeah, so let's come back.
That's a perfect example of like Sorry, it's a perfect example there of mob programming.
Yeah.
Put them all together to work on it, you know? Then it's, and a lot of people go, oh, but now, you know, like 8 people are working on one thing. No, they'll actually not just come up with a solution. Yeah. It will be the best and the highest quality. So
I believe there's, you find a sweet spot. I don't know if you necessarily want to be in mob programming. Some will say, yeah, all the time. And I don't know necessarily want to work individually all the time. There's points when you just need to crank it out, and it's this tedious, mind-numbing work that you got to do. But there's times when, okay, I'm stuck. Can we all get together? And
yes. It is. Because you, some people, sorry for interrupting you there, but some people do need that just their alone individual time and doing stuff like that. And I'm hoping that grunt work gets where AI comes in.
Yeah.
Let AI do the grunt work so you can do the fun stuff and creative stuff and, you know, whatever makes your work really pop for you. So.
Well, we still got to train the AI to be able to do the grunt work. That's the thing people don't. Someone's got to train them. And there's going to be a new job frontier out there training the AI to do this stuff.
Yes.
So, because I won't go there. Maybe we'll have another conversation about AI and Scrum. A little birdie told me that you're going to speak in Texas at this thing in July, Agile 2024. Huh? Can you share what you're going to speak about a little bit there, William?
Yes, I can. I've got a new track this year, and so I did a proposal for it, and they accepted me. So thank you for the track chairs for allowing me in.
Oh, okay, and what track and what are you going to present? You like, we have no idea what track you're talking about.
It's one that's product centric.
Okay.
So that it's more around building products and things. And so the talk I'm going to do is how to become customer centric, and I'm going to use empathy maps, which is a tool to take you there. There's other things as well. It comes from that work I was doing with design thinking. So it kind of comes out of that world. That's what I'll be talking about. I believe it's on the Tuesday. Looking forward to whoever's on the call, you know, that can and going to come and listen and see what we can all learn.
Because I know there's so many stuff you want to dial into, whatever. So don't miss William and when he does the thing. Okay. So lastly, what else is coming up that you might want to share on how people might connect with you? So what things you got besides the, you know, you do so many things, right? You got pick one. What's coming up? What do you want to share with the audience that they might be interested in joining you on?
Yeah, we've kind of, as the world of pivot, we're also doing some pivot. I'm part of the Team Catapult faculty, so we do a whole bunch of work there, developmental programs and leadership development work. And we're starting to focus on organizations. We kind of doing a little less of the public facing work at the moment. So my ask is, if your organization is looking for somebody that's good at that number one skill, the one around communication, that's one of our specialities, is working in that arena. So reach out for if that's something that you want to get better on or learn more about. The other thing I want to invite people to is, please find me on LinkedIn and connect. And if you, even if you want to just talk, if you got caught up in this whole shift that's happening in the workplace things, hey, reach out and just DM me on LinkedIn and we'll see if we can connect and have a chat. And I'm not saying I'll solve your world or all your problems, but I will definitely listen and maybe bring one or two new perspectives into your vision.
Yeah, definitely. I encourage everyone. If we're not connecting, we need to broaden our connections. I got the benefit and just share one. Someone I worked with before connected in LinkedIn and Agile here in Philadelphia and stuff, saw a post from one of his connections that they were looking for somebody. He put my name in the, you know, hey, go call Greg Mester. I sent an email right away or a message right away and, you know, the connect back. So having those connections, you never know. It may or may not work. I don't know. But I appreciate the fact that that person, you know, said, hey, suggested me as somebody because I knew them, was connect with them. So I think it's important to have those connect because you never know, right?
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, I mean, if I think about all the last things that I worked on or worked with has been word to mouth, to be honest, for especially probably the last, I want to say, like 10 to 15 years of my career now. I haven't gone in through a submission process. It's all been word to mouth. And that's kind of where I'm hoping LinkedIn will start to fill that gap for a lot of people.
Okay, cool. All right. So, Wednesday, May 15th, 2024, we're going to continue this discussion, talk about shifts in Agile, and talk about that report in our meetup group. Don't forget to join. You can join the meetup group, or you can just RSVP. There is a Zoom link in there. Do the Zoom link because I don't want all the Zoom hackers to start streaking across the screen in the middle of the meeting. I've seen that a couple times. I was in a meeting just the other day. I told them I screen everyone before I give them the access. They didn't do it. That was a mistake, you know. So make sure you RSVP in the Zoom. We do it every third Wednesday at 6 p.m. It's part of the meetup group. If anybody wants to present or share, always welcome. And I conned William to do it with me this week. So, but if
No,
anybody's
I'm
got a,
looking forward to the conversation.
you might have to do a lecture with our meetup group after you do your big show.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, gladly.
Or you can do it before your big show and get practice. It's up to you. Whatever you want to do. I'm always offering practice. Like you want to do the little small stage, like there's like the big rock stars. Do the little small stage, hone your practice, then go up the big stage and look really good, you know? So we can say we made you look good. Anyway, well, William, I want to thank you for joining us and doing this interview. I enjoyed the conversation. My throat's a little bit thin because all my little kiddos are getting sick. But I hope they're not giving it to me. I think they are, but we'll see. But anyway, William, take care. I send everyone to Marsha every time they ask me about it. So go see Marsha's group and her training and stuff like that. So,
Oh,
and
thank you. We appreciate that. And yeah, thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to continue the conversation.
all right, William, take care.